Welcome to Unsquish the Fish. The podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
All right, Dolphins fans, I'm back. I know you guys wondered, where has Ron been? Where has Unsquish the Fish podcast been? Long story short, the Dolphins, they got to me, and my ridiculous expectations as to what I thought last season would be got to me, amongst a few other little personal things that got in the way. But let's just say, with the way the season was going, perhaps motivation wasn't there. But I'm going into this year with a different new outlook, perhaps a more realistic one, not necessarily a negative one, but a realistic one. So coming back for my first show for episode one for the 2016 season, even though we're not quite officially into the league year yet, of course I'm bringing Lewis Sung from Fin Maniacs. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Ron. Glad to be here. Welcome back to the land of the radio shows.
Heck yeah, heck yeah. I got to be on your Fin Maniacs podcast last night, so that was fun. Helped me warm up a little there. That was pretty awesome, as well as right before yours, I got to be on the AFC East Bros, two brothers, Kyle and Gary, that talk AFC East. Kyle's a Jets fan, I believe. Gary's a Buffalo Bills fan, so they talk a lot of AFC East on their podcast as well. So I was back-to-back on that, just getting warmed up.
Well, you did pretty good, in my opinion, man. What have we got on the block for your show today?
I definitely want to talk about, because you know me, a lot of times I'll talk about more the emotional side of things and as opposed to the technical side of things. That's probably my problem. But I think we need to start off by talking about expectations for the 2016 season. What are your true expectations for the 2016 season? Not necessarily, we won't say record yet. What do you think's going to go well? What do you think's maybe not going to go so well this season?
Well, it's hard to make a distinction just right now, because just looking at the roster right now, just looking at the coaching staff, like obviously I expect the coaching staff to be better than it was before. But the other issue that I have is that, well, the players and how they're going to be utilized. We have a lot of holes, and we're going to continue to get holes. We're going to continue to have holes until we can find a way to. It's going to take some time to fill up all these holes. You have holes at linebacker, which needs to be addressed. You have holes at cornerback, which also need to be addressed. We don't have a whole lot of pass rushers going for us right now. Defensive tackle. A while ago, it was loaded, and now it's just kind of disappeared. Like right now, we have Ndamukong Suh and Jordan Phillips and Earl Mitchell, and everybody wants to get rid of Earl Mitchell as well. So there you go. You just got rid of most of your defensive line. Most of your corners are no good. Most of your linebackers are awful, and with the exception of one, Jelani Jenkins. And so the entire defense is just a dumpster fire right now. And with that in mind, Vance Joseph, the new defensive coordinator, a rookie defensive coordinator no less, is going to have a huge task on his hands, because if in order to fix the defense, he's going to have to find a way to find these players who are currently on the roster and see if maybe they would be better served playing elsewhere. Like for instance, I think Jamar Taylor would be an excellent free safety. Like we've already seen that he's not going to play very well at cornerback. He's just not going to be able to be that guy. But maybe he can play free safety, because the one thing that I've noticed that he can do well is he can tackle. Like, he'll ram into people and he'll slam them hard. That's a plus for him in my book. And just finding somebody who's willing to make tackles nowadays is difficult, because everybody is worried about concussions and injuries, and all that is valid. I'm not gonna have too much of a problem saying, hey, you got to protect your life, because I'm seeing all these concussions and all these lawsuits because, hey, my brain is hurt. Nevertheless, you did play football, but I digress. So if he can find a way to get some of these players playing in a way that they were better utilized beforehand, then maybe we can get something going on defense. But we seriously need a talent infusion on that side of the ball. As for the offense, with Adam Gase in charge, I'm hoping that it's going to be something along the lines of what happened in Chicago, and obviously there are going to be people who are going to spew out stats about how Chicago was nowhere near as – it was just as bad as Miami, and they didn't win all that much, and blah, 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 and all that lovely stuff just without any context. But people who are looking at the film, people who are watching what happened in Chicago, and you hear all these comments made from Peyton Manning and, more importantly, Jay Cutler, who before last season was pretty much getting – getting run out of town from Chicago, and then Adam Gase shows up and suddenly Jay Cutler is cool again. So I don't see that as a coincidence. I don't see that as something that can be dismissed. If Adam Gase truly was brought in here to fix, quote unquote, fix Ryan Tannehill, then I have confidence that he can find a way to get this guy who's still full of talent, and I don't think anybody can deny he's talented, but He hasn't been utilized to his full ability. Hopefully, what Adam Gase can do is find a way to get Ryan Tannehill to be more of the player we expect him to be. We can hopefully find a way to get the running backs involved, because God knows we didn't have our running backs involved last season. Hopefully, we can find a way to compensate for the terrible offensive line, which I'm going to call right now. It's going to be terrible again, because we can't seem to fix it for our lives. And hopefully, he'll be able to get these wide receivers, tight ends, whoever is in there, to just be utilized to the best of their abilities, similarly to how they were used in Chicago.
Okay, you just said a lot, so I'm gonna back it up a little to some of the things you said at first. You said we know the Dolphins fans want to get rid of this guy. We know they want to get rid of that guy. They're mad at this guy. They're mad at Sue. He's overpaid. Blah blah blah. So let's kind of I'm gonna bring it into what we know will happen. Sue's not going anywhere for a long time, right? Earl Mitchell. I don't know. I don't think they trust Phillips enough, because the guy just gets killed, blown up against the run. Horrible. He's pretty good in pass pressure, but he's horrible against the run. I don't think Earl Mitchell might be going anywhere. I believe Cam Wake, I mean, we talked about that extensively last night on your show. I think Cam Wake is coming back. I don't think we're going to have OV. So now there's an issue, another defensive end. Now that's a true issue that I think is realistic. We're going to have to figure that one out. The linebacking core, it's as bad as we all think it is. It's Jenkins and then a bunch of crap. That's my opinion. I've felt that way for a year. I won't say quite a year. I was willing to ignore the holes we had, because I thought we had enough other good guys, and perhaps I'd blown up some of those guys to be better than they ended up really being. But we know we need linebackers, not just at least two starters. We need depth, too, because we really don't have it for the most part. And we're not going to get it by bringing on four undrafted free agents again. That's not going to happen. You're going to have to find a free agent. You're going to have to find some high round picks, draft picks, I should say, to try and at least start to fix that linebacking core. I don't know if you can fix the whole thing in 1 year. And then you go to secondary. Like you said, we need safety. Can Jamar Taylor do it? Maybe, maybe not. Is Akins going to improve? Maybe, maybe not. And we need two cornerbacks now, because we cut Bryce McCain, and you've got Grimes, who he's not going anywhere, and everybody knows how I feel about it. He's not going anywhere, because there's no way you can cut him now. He's got us by the balls. It's just point blank, got us by the balls. He knows he's staying. They're not going to be able to renegotiate that contract. I'd be very surprised if that happened. So the realism is you need two cornerbacks. You need two starting linebackers and some depth. You may need to look about getting another defensive tackle, honestly. And you need a defensive end, maybe two, because Shelby's probably going to leave too, maybe. I mean, you got a lot. That's just one side of the ball. That's a lot of holes to fill. I have a feeling this defense is going to struggle this year. That's my opinion. It's going to struggle this year. Even with, you know, the only thing you've got is you got Wake if he comes back healthy. You got Sue and you got Rashad Jones. Grimes is okay. He's not as good as he was, but he's still good. And then that's it. Then you really have trouble after that beyond Jenkins.
And that's the biggest problem I see is that, and you know what the worst part is? Dolphins fans being who they are, they're going to say that it's all Vance Joseph's fault, that it's just Kevin Coyle 2.0, that it's just another guy who came in, was a secondary coach for the Bengals, and now he sucks terribly as a defensive coordinator. Oh, we need to fire him. And we know that's going to be the case, even though he's only had 1 year, which is really, really sad in my opinion. I understand the whole idea of everybody's tired of being patient. I get it. I do. Really, I do. I'm not going to begrudge anybody for wanting wins, but it's like, you have to have patience. If you don't, then you're just not going. You're never going to be happy as a fan, because the moment things start going wrong, you're going to have to reset and hit the reset button. That's like, this isn't a video game. You can't just hit reset every time just before you're about to lose. You're going to have to go through it. It's a process, and like it or not, you're going to have to go through the process. People want the product without the process. That's something my pastor actually said that part of life. Now, it actually applies to football as well. You can't have the product without going through the process. Football teams, in order to win, you have to start somewhere, and this is where they're going to start. Is it going to be good the first year? I really don't think it will be. I think it's actually going to be pretty darn terrible.
Probably.
But you got to go through that process. Otherwise, you might as well just go root for another team that's already gotten through the process.
And the thing about that is I know people are getting impatient, but I mean, you're starting over coaching staff wise, so you gotta be willing to go with this restart and give the coach at least some time. Now, I do want to say that we heard when he was first hired that Gase gets final say of the 53-man roster. I think that what wasn't really made super clear in that is he may get final say, maybe, of the 53-man roster or have a lot of input, but bringing in all the guys we got to bring in, that's Tannenbaum and the new GM. Those are the guys that are going to bring in the talent. He's just going to say who stays and who goes.
Right.
That's a big difference. So don't, you know, when you see some crap on this team and there's no way with all these holes you're not going to have some, you know, I can't point to Gase and say, oh, look at all this crap he brought in. No. He didn't bring in anybody. He's not bringing in anybody. T-Bomb's bringing in the people. Gase, it's his job to decide, okay, these are my best 53. These are the guys I'm going to try and make work. Now, if some bad decisions are made and who stays and who goes, now you can kind of maybe point to Gase some. I'm a little nervous about that just because I don't see anything in his history where he's had any experience with that. I mean, what do you know about him as far as being a true talent evaluator and making decisions on who stays and who goes? I'm sure he's had some input as an OC, but input in making the final decision is two different things.
Well, I would think that just being an offensive coordinator and being this supposed offensive mind that he is, everybody keeps saying how brilliant he is as an offensive coordinator. He's this brilliant football brain, and that's something that I don't think anybody ever said about Joe Philbin that I can remember.
No.
Obviously, Joe Philbin was organized, and he was a nice guy, and he was all these lovely things that I would love to have as my next-door neighbor, but not as my football coach. Now, for Gase, it's more along the lines of his brain, his ability to strategize, his ability to get the best out of his players, because he knows he can see talent, and he can see what he can utilize. I don't know if that's going to – I don't know how well he's going to be able to pick the players that he has on his roster, because that's something new he's going to have to do. Now he's going to be able to say, okay, I can use this guy better than I can use this guy, so this guy has to go. That kind of a thing. Now, with that said, I'm sure that Tannenbaum is not going to just completely ignore Adam Gase. If Gase says, I can really use this guy, I'm sure he's going to take it into consideration. Obviously, he's going to get final say as to who gets drafted or who gets signed as a free agent, but I'm not going to say that Gase is going to get ignored, because this guy is – if you're hanging your future on Adam Gase, there's no way you're just going to ignore him. Like, let's be clear about this. Stephen Ross and Mike Tannenbaum and all those guys picked Adam Gase. Like, he was pretty much their first choice. So, congratulations, Miami. You got your first choice to be your head coach for once, instead of getting like the fifth choice. So that's a good thing. So Tannenbaum and Ross have hung the Dolphins' future, and Tannenbaum, in Tannenbaum's case, his future, on what Adam Gase is able to do. So I really don't expect Tannenbaum to just say, okay, Gase, I'm going to give you players. You have to find a way to make them work. So I'm sure Gase is going to be able to say, okay, I can use this guy over here, so see if you can get that guy for me. So with that in mind, if he can build a strategy around these players, then maybe we'll see some improvement, at least on the offensive side of the ball. Defensive, I don't know yet.
Yeah, I'd say going into this season, again, we've got a long off season to go. I'm not even sure. Do you know offhand how many players are actually on the roster currently? I mean, we got to get it to 90, if I'm correct. I don't even know how many's on there. 50 something, maybe 60.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure exactly how many there are, but it's 50. I think if we're gonna talk about, just since we cut people, I'm gonna say like I don't know, 49, 50 maybe, but that's probably, I'm probably wrong on that number because I'm discounting the folks who are on the injured reserve and the folks who are on the reserve list or whatever. So I'm probably wrong about that.
Yeah.
But there are, there is, again, there is talent on this football team. It's just so sorely misused that it's hard to see it right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Lamar Miller probably being one of the biggest misuses of talent. I'm hoping that we keep him. Obviously, we got into a big conversation about that last night. Now, are you a proponent of us going out and getting a bunch of free agent temporary fixes, you know, 29, 30, 31-year-old guys to try and just fill holes the best we can for now? Are you down for just accepting the holes we have, do the best you can through the draft, maybe some third-tier free agents for a year or something like that? I mean, what strategy do you want us to try and do everything we can and mortgage the future to try and get 9 or 10 wins this year, which I just don't know that that's going to happen no matter what you do? Or are you down for a rebuilding year? Would you accept a rebuilding year from the Dolphins? I don't see T-Bomb trying it because I don't think that's his style, but would you accept it if they did go that path?
I would want to do a rebuilding year, but I don't think that's what the Dolphins are going to do. I think they're convinced that they can still be a playoff contender. I think they're convinced that they can still make a lot of things happen, and maybe they can. Maybe with a new coaching staff, they can put something together. I don't personally see it. I think they're pretty much going to fall on their face. Now then, if they decide to go out and get a bunch of free agents, I mean, I'm not against free agency. That's a big part of the Denver Broncos Super Bowl team was made out of people who were signed as free agents. They didn't necessarily have all their own talent. They just found a way to find talent on the street and utilize them to the best of their ability. So, people get mad when you say you can't you win the off season Super Bowl and then you wind up losing in the regular season. Not necessarily. Denver is living proof that if you can put together a team of free agents and make it work, you just have to have a strong coaching staff that knows how to get the best of the players that are currently on the roster. Enough garbage of let's see if we can find a player that fits our scheme. That's not what Wade Phillips did in Denver on the defensive side of the ball. He even said it in a press conference, I believe, is that you need to take the players you have and build your scheme around what they do best. That is the mentality that has been missing in Miami for I don't even know how long anymore. I probably wasn't even that big of a fan of football the last time that the Dolphins had somebody who was using the players to the best of their ability instead of the other way around. If you can get the best out of your players, build the scheme around what they do well rather than just making a scheme and then saying, okay, this guy fits what I want to do, this guy fits what I want to do. So that is the biggest problem in Miami, and that is the biggest thing holding them back. Like, I understand the whole point of, well, free agency is not the way to go. Correct, you're right about that. It's usually best if you can sign your own players, develop your own players, draft well, and make a lot of cheap talent come to fruition, and then you can win that way. That would be the ideal way of doing it. But if you wanted to go free agency, there are a lot of affordable ways of doing things out there. You don't always have to go for the biggest splash in order to get something going. Now, knowing Mike Tannenbaum, I would expect a big splash because that's kind of his thing. So I don't know.
Ross too. I mean, the two of those guys together, it's almost a foregone conclusion. They're going for it every offseason.
Yeah, but you know what I noticed, Ron, and I'm probably making a lot of enemies by saying all this stuff, is that people want it both ways. They want let me use this example. Everybody is furious over the idea that they may think about restructuring Ndamukong Suh's contract and giving the Dolphins more cap space to work with just this year, while at the same time kicking Sue's salary down the road. So that way we would essentially be saying we're going to keep Sue longer than maybe we should. Okay. First of all, Ndamukong Suh is one of the best defensive tackles in football. He's one of the premier players in the league. So I don't see a problem with doing that, first of all. I would expect for him to be really good all the way through his contract. Now, with that being said, people don't want to do that because they want to eat the $20 million cap space thing right now. So that way they'll be good to go later on in the future. But at the same time, they don't want to do a rebuilding year because they know it's going to hurt to see them lose all the time. They don't want to go through – It's what I said earlier again. They want the product without the process. So you can either restructure Sue and let the Dolphins make moves now and they can try to win, and you'll be mad about that because the front office being delusional all over again. Or you can go ahead and let Sue's contract be eaten now. You can go ahead and let Tannehill flop on his face right now, start over next year, and you can just continue to whine and moan about how 2016 was a wasted year.
Understood. Now, I'm honestly not big on restructuring Sue's deal. That's just me. But the only advantage, or the advantage I see to it, is a $27 million cap hit this year doesn't sting as much as it does in 3 or 4 years, because in 3 or 4 years, the cap is going to be higher. So that's one of the advantages of pushing it down the road. But if they want to go out and get a bunch of free agents, I don't see how they don't restructure. I'll be honest with you. If I saw the number correctly, doesn't restructuring give them like a $16 million, space there? $16 million of cap savings to restructure?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, that's fairly significant. And they need like, what, $5-6 million or something to sign the rookies?
Usually it's somewhere along those lines.
Somewhere along those lines. Plus they've done some savings. I have a feeling a few other cuts are down the road here a bit.
No doubt. Yeah, they have to. They only have like $5 million in cap space right now. So
yeah, they couldn't sign a free. All they could do is sign their rookies, and they couldn't even bring enough players on. Well, they could fill a roster to 90 because it's only 47 guys that actually count against the cap. Everyone else doesn't. Even like the bottom six of the 53-man roster, those bottom six salaries don't actually count against your cap. It's the 47 guys that actually count, but. It would be tough. I mean, they wouldn't really be able to do any free agent signings without at least restructuring Sue or doing some more cuts. But I don't mind if they decide to do a rebuilding year. I know they won't, though. I know they won't. I just don't mind. I don't mind if they just suck it up and do it. It wouldn't bother me at all. I think it's... I mean, I just don't know how they're going to get around this defensive issue. And it's funny, last year I went in thinking the Dolphins were going to have one of the best defenses in the league, and man, was I wrong? Was I wrong about so many things last year? that's for sure. And I think a lot of us were. I mean, I definitely bought into the hype. But this year, I won't buy into the hype. Like, I tell you what, one thing that'll make me mad. If you want to go sign Forte because Gase trusts him and you like him, that's fine. But if you decide to let Miller go and then to sign Forte, I will not be happy with that move. How would you feel about that?
I'm sorry, Ron. Say it again. I had a cutout.
No. If the Dolphins were to say they re-sign Miller, but they still try and get Forte, I'm fine with that. But if they were to actually just not re-sign Miller and get Forte instead, that would infuriate me, because that is a typical Dolphins thing that they've been doing for years now. We've seen them let go of guys that are good and young, and go get a guy that seems like he's a little bigger name and try and sell it to the Dolphins fans that this is the best move. I'm not falling for that crap anymore.
Oh.
Keep the guys that are good. I understand we've talked about OV last night, and he probably won't be kept because he's so expensive, but Miller's not going to be that expensive.
Yeah, that I can agree with. I mean, Lamar Miller, I feel like, is probably the best offensive weapon the Dolphins have right now. Like, all due respect to Jarvis Landry, he has his own set of problems. Like, I'm not going to begrudge him for his speed, because obviously he's faster than what his combine said. Everybody keeps going back to that 4.7 or whatever he ran at the combine, which isn't really how fast he is to begin with. But I digress. Lamar Miller has more explosiveness in his game than Jarvis does. I mean, Juice has all the energy, all that passion, all that other incredible stuff that makes him seem more special than he is. Like, as a player, as just on physical talent alone, Jarvis Landry is not that special. What makes him special is his passion and his explosive energy. But if he didn't have that, he's just another guy. Like, would you agree with that assessment?
I guess you're saying his heart and effort make up a lot of his production on the field.
Right.
I'll go with that. Yeah, his heart and his effort. If he had the heart and effort of what we see from most of the Dolphins players, especially free agents when they come here, and they decide to sip it up on South Beach and enjoy their money and not play hard. Yeah, if he had that kind of effort, yeah, I don't think he would be, he wouldn't be catching 100 passes.
Yeah, if Juice wasn't that passionate, he wouldn't be nearly the player he currently is. Now, with that said, Lamar Miller, I don't see him like running down the field having explosive bursts of passion. I don't see him screaming in people's faces, and yet he still has them. He still finds ways to make plays all the time. Lamar Miller, I think, is one of the better running backs in the NFL right now. And if it means he's going to wind up getting like $4 or $5 million per year, I'd be willing to pay that. I mean,
I think that's a fair price for him.
Jamal Charles is making a little bit more than him. Like, and who's, and you know, wouldn't put, if he got $4 to $5 million a year, he would be right in between Jamal Charles and Shane Vereen. Who really honestly believes that Shane Vereen is anywhere near the ballpark of what Lamar Miller is?
No, I don't. I used to like Shane Vereen. I think that was more of a fantasy football thing than it was.
That was New England.
Yeah, that was more of a New England thing, I should say, and a fantasy thing. I used to think that he was going to really be good one day. And I'm done waiting for that guy to be good. He's not as good as Lamar Miller, not even close.
So I would be willing to pay $4 to $5 million for Lamar Miller. I would certainly pay him $4 or $5 million as opposed to paying like $3 or $4 to Matt Forte, who's already old and he's got more traction on his tires he's already been worn down. Lamar Miller, like, it's not even just how old he is. I mean, just look at his workload. Lamar Miller is practically. He's practically a rookie. Like, obviously, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but like, how often has he actually held the ball? How often does he actually get to run the ball? And with that in mind, with the 4.6 yards per carry, he barely even carries the ball. Like, I think there were a bunch of times just last season where he barely carried the ball 11 times. That's insane. You're running back. Like, I understand the whole idea of Lamar Miller not being this workhorse who can carry the ball 20 to 25 times a game. That's fine, but only 11? That's nuts.
Well, that's a combination of Philbin and Laser, which, I mean, you know how I feel about Laser. I think I made that clear. I was never a Laser fan, so I was never a Chip Kelly scheme fan to begin with. Not a Chip Kelly fan. Then I wasn't a Laser fan when we brought him. I was not excited about that. You know, I would agree that Tannehill had a pretty good season. Decent season in his first year under Laser. I don't know if that was just Laser or more Tannehill.
It was his best season.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. I mean, Laser showed his true colors. You know, he didn't want to run the ball. Philbin didn't want to run the ball. You know, they both lost their jobs over it. You know, they'll go somewhere else and try and do the same crap if they ever get in that position again and lose their jobs again. They're not. Neither one of them are very good.
Laser's the quarterback coach in. Where did he go? Hey, I know he's a quarterback's coach for somebody.
And I can't remember.
Went back to be and Kevin Coyle is now hired to be the secondary coach again. I don't know where Joe Philbin is.
Went to Indianapolis or the Saints or something.
He's either with New York or he's with the Giants or he's with the Colts.
Yeah, I think he went with the Colts.
Dan Campbell went to the Saints.
Yeah,
he's the assistant head coach. Go figure.
Yeah, that's. I mean, good for Campbell. I wouldn't have minded had they kept Campbell and given him a shot, but. I was kind of surprised that they didn't decide to. I was really surprised, I'll be honest with you, even though I know Gase was their number one choice and they got who they wanted. I was surprised the Dolphins went again the route of a coach that did not have previous head coaching experience, that they went for another rookie head coach. I was surprised.
Well, I don't have a problem with it, Ron. I mean, like, some of the best somebody brought this up just a few weeks ago. Most of the coaches who actually made it to the playoffs were first time head coaches.
Yeah, like but the track record for Miami hasn't been very good.
Okay,
there.
Well, that's Miami. You can't apply a philosophy and say, well, it doesn't work, period. Because if it only happens to Miami, that just means we're bad luck and we have problems picking people. That doesn't mean that because we did it this way, we are doomed to fail. That's a bad way of looking.
No,
at it.
I'm not saying we're doomed to fail. I was just surprised they went down that path, considering the lack of success they'd had. Picking offensive coordinators or O-line coaches or what have you. I mean, we haven't had a head coach that had previous head coaching experience since Wonstad. And what was he, only the fourth Dolphins coach ever in the history of the team, if I'm not mistaken? So we've had all these OCs since then, from Cam to, yeah, I mean, Sprano was an O-line coach, and then, you know, Philbin, I mean, you name it. It hasn't really worked for us. I'm not saying it's a bad choice. I was just... I was thinking they were going to go down like Shanahan or something like that. And Shanahan was a Tannehill fan. He wanted to draft Tannehill the year they moved up and got RG3. So, I mean, he was a proponent of Tannehill anyway. I was surprised they didn't go down that road.
Well, the whole thing with Ryan Tannehill is a completely different discussion, and I don't know how much you want to talk about him today. Because
I was ready to get into it right now. I was saving it for the second half of the show.
Okay, let's talk about Tannehill.
You don't want to talk about Tannehill? What's up?
We have to talk about Tannehill.
We're talking about the Miami Dolphins. Got to talk about Tannehill.
This is the first. He's a Miami Dolphin.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You gotta talk about him.
Yeah, you gotta talk about him. Like, Unsquish the Fish is back, so let's talk Tannehill.
Mm-hmm. So, what do we think Gase is really going to do to, when you say where he's going to capitalize on what players do best, what does Tannehill do best?
Move.
Move out of the way of the crappy O-line.
That's the one word that I would just say that what does Tannehill do best? Move.
Yeah, bootlegs.
Throw on the run. Just run, period. I mean, Ron, I don't know if you were keeping a close eye on this, because I know near the end of the season, you had already pretty much tuned out Miami. So I was absolutely furious when I heard Dan Campbell speak these words in a press conference that they were trying to make sure that Ryan Tannehill did not bail out or abandon a play prematurely. That is in the context of they don't want him to scramble. They want him to stay back there in the pocket and wait for something to open up. That is dumb beyond belief. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of flack for making this comparison again, but I have to do it every single time. Because Cam Newton and Russell Wilson, what makes Cam Newton and Russell Wilson so special? What makes them different right now than Ryan Tannehill? I don't want to hear about playoff appearances. I don't want to hear about Super Bowls. I don't want to hear about win-loss record. What makes them better right now? What attribute would you give those two running backs, those two quarterbacks that Ryan Tannehill does not do right now?
They can extend plays with their legs, for one.
Make plays with their legs,
yeah, either way.
But what Ryan Tannehill was touted as somebody who could do just that. Why hasn't he? Because he just doesn't feel like it? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's been very, even when they've used him, used his legs, it's generally been called plays a lot of times. I never understood why they wouldn't allow him to bootleg more. In my opinion, he's just really good at throwing the ball on the run. One of the better quarterbacks in the league at throwing the ball on the run. I've always felt that way. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating it, but I truly feel that way.
I don't think you're exaggerating. I think it's true. Throwing the ball on the run is one of Ryan Tannehill's strengths. I don't know why they don't do it more. I don't know why they decided to not let him scramble. Russell Wilson and Cam Newton ran the ball more than any other quarterbacks in the league. They made their own running game a lot of the time. Cam Newton and Jonathan Stewart, they probably had more carries combined than most teams did all year long. So just that alone is enough to say, you know, running the ball would be a really good idea with Ryan Tannehill, don't you think? I guess not. I'm sure you're going to get comments later on, Ron. This guy Lewis keeps making excuses for Ryan Tannehill. Well, guess what? Stop giving me reasons to give excuses.
That's true.
Like, then you have Greg Jennings going all over the country on ESPN and all these radio shows saying Dan Ryan Tannehill needs freedom. Okay. I just saw a tweet from Omar Kelly saying, what's the one common denominator that all these coaches, why don't they all these coaches trust Ryan Tannehill? Because he hasn't shown it. Okay, first of all, I hate it. I don't even know what it means, like this innate ability to just suddenly turn on a switch and suddenly you're the best player in the league. I don't even know how that works. I guess that's what Tim Tebow had in the fourth quarter. He would just turn on the it factor and suddenly they won games. Okay, so you want to go get Tim Tebow? I don't think anybody wants to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right, so with that in mind, right. So you have all these quarterbacks in the NFL. Pretty much every single one of them Sorry for my voice cracking, by the way. I get angry.
You're getting excited. I like it.
I feel like it's my responsibility to educate people on these times. You have every single quarterback in the league, pretty much. Like, name me one quarterback besides Ryan Tannehill who doesn't have the ability to audible, who doesn't have the ability to make checks at the line of scrimmage, who doesn't have the ability to even, like... just look at it, man. They're basically saying, we're going to handcuff your arms and legs, and you're going to have to make plays otherwise. What quarterback in the league, besides Ryan Tannehill, doesn't have the normal freedoms a starting quarterback has, let alone somebody who's been in the league for 4 years, going into his fifth season now? Kirk Cousins gets to call audibles. Brock Osweiler, as a backup, gets to call audibles. Why? Because that's just normal stuff that a quarterback should be able to do. If you know the playbook, which I'm sure Ryan Tannehill does, if you know what you're doing, if you can see these things, we don't even know if Ryan Tannehill knows how to read defenses because he hasn't been given the opportunity. And I don't want to hear any more about why, well, maybe the reason they didn't let him is because he couldn't. Okay, well, show us then. Expose him if he's a poser. Stop giving us reasons to give excuses, and if you really want us to know once and for all if he's bad or good, then let him have all these freedoms that every quarterback has, and if he falls on his face, done. There's no more reason to give excuses. He's done. Get out.
I mean, I have to agree with you on that. I honestly do, but I don't want to see them shove a square peg into a round hole. I think we know there's some things that Tannehill doesn't do very good. For instance, the running thing keeps him back from behind the line. It kind of eliminates some of those pocket present issues in some instances if you're allowing him to run freely more often. Another thing is he doesn't throw the touch fade pass very well. And everybody talks about it's the deep ball accuracy. Well, no, it's not really the deep ball accuracy as much as it is when you want him to kind of throw in a ball up and over a guy and into a guy's hands. That's just not his thing. It's regardless of the distance. I mean, we saw him fail like six straight times against the Jets. With that, they kept on trying to throw that corner fade to Parker.
Yeah, well, that was a different reason.
The pass, that you can tell it's not his pass. He doesn't throw it well. It's not in his game, so stop trying to force it. It's not going to work. So if we see Gase actually come out, and we know as Dolphins fans what Tannehill does well, and we know what he doesn't do well.
If we're being objective about it, if you're not, you're either saying he can do everything or he can do nothing.
No, I'm telling you, and I said it last year on the show in like October. I made the same case. I said Tannehill does these things well. Excellent. A few of them, one of the best in the league. And I said Tannehill does these things horribly. Stop making him do it. I'm not saying anything different than I wasn't saying last October as the wheels started to fall off. I am saying the same exact thing, and I will continue to say it. It is obvious to me, an untrained layperson, what Tannehill does well and what he doesn't do well. So stop trying to force a square peg into a round hole. Stop it. So supposedly Gase is one to fit the right scheme with the players and their abilities. We're going to find out, because we know what he does well and what he doesn't well. And by now, they should have watched every snap this guy's ever played, and they should know the same. But if you're going to say, oh, we need to get you better at doing this, we need to get you better at doing that, and you're going to try and make him do those things, that's what Philbin and Laser kept doing.
Well, Ron, there's a difference, man. It's a fine line. I'm not here to say that they shouldn't let him and try to improve on that, because of course you want him to improve on his weaknesses. But the problem is that when game time starts up, you shouldn't try to make him improve those weaknesses in the game. Like, you want him to practice those fade throws. You want him to try and get better at the deep ball and all that stuff. But you want him to be able to do what he does best. Don't. There's a difference between improving what you're bad at and just forgetting everything that you were already good at.
It's true. I mean, it's 100% true. And, I mean, the big thing is, too, we keep talking about this line, man. You know, this line, it's got two Pro Bowlers on it. It's just the guard situation, I think. And I've heard things, oh, you don't need really great guards. You just need average ones. Well, we don't have average ones. So when we get some average ones, come back and make that argument to me. I mean, we've got bottom of the barrel guard play. 3 straight years we've drafted a guard in what, a second, third, fourth round? Like third or fourth round? 3 straight years I feel like we've struck out. I know it's a little early on Douglas, but you know what I mean?
And I still think Billy Turner can be good. Like, he moves people around. He's a mauler, but he needs to work on his technique.
That sounds a lot like John Jerry. It's kind of some of the same things that were said about John Jerry.
Well, would you take John Jerry over what we have now?
Yes, I didn't want to. All that disappeared. Well, he was a free agent, but let's face it, he was mired in the Bullygate scandal, and you know we lost both.
We lost both our guards.
Yeah,
we didn't like him anyway.
I liked him. I was happy with him.
Well, you were probably in the extreme minority
because I thought he was. I thought he was a pretty good guard. You didn't like him then. Now look what you got. You'd love to, like you said, love to have him back, wouldn't you?
Yeah, right now, yeah, over what we have.
So what do you think they're going to do? Are they going to go and try and – I mean, I just remember that – was it Evan Mathis last year? Was that the guy? He was a needle.
I still don't think we should have signed Mathis.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to have another Evan Mathis situation this year where somebody cuts a good guard and all we hear about for like a month straight every day, every article, why we should sign so-and-so guard? Man, I cannot take that anymore. I'm going to start telling people to like shut up. If I hear something about some player this year, you know, let it go. He went to Denver. Yeah, they won the Super Bowl. I don't think he would have fixed all our problems. That's my opinion.
No, he wouldn't have fixed all our problems. And it took him like half the season to even get his head back in the game. Dolphins, can you imagine if it had been Dolphins, if he had been a member of the Dolphins when that happened? They would have thought, we wasted the $4 million we could have used elsewhere. And you know that's what would happen, Ron.
That's what would have happened. He wouldn't have come in and just fixed everything. If he was that great, he would have been picked up in like a minute. He wouldn't, and he wouldn't have been sitting out there for a month, waiting for somebody to give him a deal that wasn't. I mean, Denver didn't give him much.
They gave him like $3 million or something, which is actually $1 million less than we expected he would get.
And it wasn't that long a deal. And you had, and I hate saying his name, but you had Omar Kelly out there saying, "I'd give him 3 years for $11 million." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" I was like, "Give me a break with that." I just don't want to hear that. Like they need to, what I want to see us do is figure that situation out as much as they're going to be able to figure it out, figure out what they want to do between, you know, free agency and the draft. So we're not going into June, July, August, and we're having these conversations about, oh my God, we don't have a guard. We're going to be starting Donald Thomas, wrong player.
I'm going to make a prediction that everybody's going to hate. He's back.
As a starter?
Maybe.
Oy. Well, then what you're saying is some guard somewhere is going to get cut late.
They keep saying how much they really like seeing Dallas Thomas. If Adam Gase comes out and says Dallas Thomas has made some improvements, I think
we're
might
screwed.
Just...
Yeah, we're screwed. That's it. We're screwed. If that happens, we know that means they have no way to fix it, so they're going to have to roll with it. Yeah, right. So what are you gonna do with the other? So Billy Turner, Jameel Douglas. I mean, dude, 3 years in a row. I mean, we don't get this right. What? Dallas Thomas is on year four now. Am I correct? This will be his fourth season.
This is fourth year. This is his last year of his rookie deal, I believe. So, hallelujah! One more year of Dallas Thomas, and then we can move on.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. But at least if you give Tannehill the ability to run out of the pocket more, kind of nullifies that a little bit more.
It's not, I don't want him to have green light, red light, yellow light. I just let him. If he feels like this, it's been a downward trend all throughout his career. In his rookie year, he ran all the time, and we were like, yeah, we got a quarterback who can run with the ball now. And then he just started to not run. And then it got to the point where he doesn't run at all because don't abandon the play. Okay, well, guess what, folks? Cam Newton and Russell Wilson, quote unquote, abandoned their plays all the time. And they're winners because of it. And I'm sure it's a big part of who they are now. Look at Robert Griffin III. He ran the ball all the time, and he was going to be the next big thing. He was a superstar in the NFL. He was going to be the next, the next Michael Vick back in his prime days. And then he got hurt and just stopped running, and suddenly RG3 is sitting behind Kirk Cousins. He's already been cut pretty much, and he's not going to be signed anywhere as a starter.
Yep.
Because they decided to take out his legs from under him. Robert Griffin III, in his case, it was taken out literally. For Ryan Tannehill, it's been figuratively had his legs taken out from under him. Don't run because we don't want you to. Don't use what is possibly one of your greatest assets. That's just dumb.
And I agree, and I don't have a problem with them doing it because I feel that Tannehill will pick and choose the time to run correctly, because I still feel that his instinct is not to run. His instinct is to look downfield for the receiver. That's the way I feel. Just from watching him over these years, I feel that he will choose that over the running, but the ability, the freedom to run when he feels like he needs to run, That's all we're looking for, right? I mean, that's all we want. Just let the guy run when he feels he needs to run. I don't feel like he's going to bail out of every play within a second. I don't see him as that guy. I don't see Russell Wilson as that guy. I don't see Cam as that guy. They're not those guys.
But they run way more than he does.
They run more than he does because they run when they feel the need is correct. So just let him have that freedom. Let him be a quarterback. And if he falls on his face and sucks, we know to move on. Am I right?
Correct.
Have we done that yet with Tannehill, though?
No.
Nope. We sure haven't. I mean, I think we're going to find out this year, hopefully. I'm hopeful. We're going to find out this year just how bad Philbin and Philbin's coaching philosophy and that staff in general was. When we see, hopefully, what is at least a decent coach and a decent coaching staff come to our team, I think we're going to see how bad it was for 4 years.
I'm not going to go as far and say that what Stephen Ross said, that Adam Gase is going to be the next Bill Belichick or Bill Parcells. Like, obviously, that's crazy.
They just need to stop it with that crap.
They need to stop with that kind of stuff. I'm not even sure if this is even going out on a limb, but I expect Gase and his staff to be much better than whatever Joe Philbin was able to put together.
I would envision so. I'm most excited about him saying, I look at the players I got, and I build around their talents. That, if nothing else, you know, I am excited
about
that.
The philosophy he's talked about is better.
It's exciting. Than whatever. That is the one. I won't say the one thing. There's a few things that kind of excite me for this season, and many things that depress me because I know the challenges and obstacles this team has. But that is one thing that does excite me, and not even necessarily for this season. For this season and seasons to come, I think we have the best chance of success. And, you know, I think you've seen Belichick, for instance. I hate Belichick anyway because he's a Patriots coach and they win so much and yada, yada. But take that aside. When Belichick was the Cleveland coach, I hated him. I could not stand him because he was that guy. I've got this scheme. It's going to be this way. And everybody has to fit my scheme or forget you. And that's exactly how Chip Kelly is, and that's another reason I don't like him. I do not like coaches that are just so bound and determined to have their scheme that they will come in and they'll cut like 35% of their roster and try and find guys that aren't even as good that they cut to fit their scheme. And the biggest example of that is two of the best corners in this league, if you want to use PFF numbers or whatever, are Vontae Davis and Sean Smith, and we got rid of them both. We could have had like a great tandem right there. We got rid of them both, and all because of scheme fit, pretty much. For the most part, scheme fit. Are you freaking kidding me? I didn't like that move then. I don't agree with coaches that do that. But so if this guy, Gase, is really going to be, you know, making it about what the talent we have, I think we got a shot to maybe overachieve a little. Whatever that looks like for this year for the Dolphins, I'm not sure.
I think they'll be lucky if they get to 8-8. Maybe that's just me.
I'm with you. I think we are somewhere between 6 to 8 wins. And I know that Dolphins fans don't want to hear that. And you probably don't come to my show for that kind of talk. And some of y'all may not listen to me anymore because you think that, you know, he's the next Belichick. Tannehill's going to throw for 5,000 yards. I mean, come on, guys.
Absolutely not.
Don't fall into this stuff anymore. You can be a fan and be realistic. You can be a super fan and be realistic about where your team stands. We just named off all the issues that this team has, and we were just talking about starters. Like, we didn't even get into depth on this team, you know, beyond the starters on defense. I don't think the offense is – I think the offense is ahead of the defense when it comes to the team. Obviously, we've got some O-line issues. Is Tannehill this? Is he that? Beyond that, I don't mind it. I'm concerned about tight end because we're probably going to let go of Jordan Cameron, I'm assuming. I don't know.
That just leaves,
what, Sims, Stoneburner? I mean, that's ugly to me at tight end. So that means you're going to have to, what, go get a free agent? If you draft a rookie tight end suck. That's just bottom line. I mean, you go to the best tight ends to play this game ever and look at their rookie season. Look at Jimmy Graham's rookie season. Look at Gronk's rookie season. Come back to me if you think you're going to draft a guy in the third or fourth round. He's going to come out and catch 10 touchdowns for you. Get back to me on that. It will not happen. Tight end is one of the hardest positions to learn in the NFL. So you're going to have to go get another free agent. I don't know. I think you might as well just keep Jordan Cameron. That's my opinion.
I would keep him too, but not at the price tag he's at. Oh.
Yeah, but
I would see if I could get him to go down a little.
Okay, I agree. See if you can get him to restructure. Maybe add another year to the deal. What would you say?
For that, yeah. I mean, just looking at Jordan Cameron and who he is, it's still a lot better than a lot of the guys out there. Because once again, it comes right back down to totally being misused. You turned one of the premier catching tight ends in all of football into this blocking guy. Again, he was a seam threat, red zone target, all of these incredible things, and you can talk about the lack of chemistry between Ryan Tannehill and Jordan Cameron all you want to. We just looking at the routes, looking at what they're good at, the whole idea of what Jordan Cameron is capable of. How much of what you saw in Cleveland did you see in Miami?
None of it. We thought we were going to, but we didn't.
What has he had in Cleveland? Jordan Cameron had Brandon Whedon for a little bit. And how many people still think that Brandon Whedon is a better quarterback than Ryan Tannehill? I would love to know that.
No, I don't know how anybody could make that judgment. His mom.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Like, Brandon Whedon couldn't even survive as a backup for Dallas. So
yeah.
And that's with the best offensive line in football and with Dez Bryant and all those incredible talented players on the offense. So, and yet Whedon was still able to put up incredible years. Like, how many years did Whedon have in Cleveland before he got the boot? Like 2 years, not even?
Yeah, something like that. They weren't real patient with him, but he wasn't very good.
Right. So, and yet he was still able to do what he did with Jordan Cameron. So Ryan Tannehill couldn't do it because Tannehill sucks? Because Cameron sucks? I don't think either is true. So something had to go wrong with the scheme.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just didn't like each other, but I don't see that being the reality either.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, I'm excited to see, man. The off season's always exciting because there's always the chance you could strike gold somewhere. You could get, especially when you have a new coach. Because the unknown, you could always, you know, lightning in a bottle, or, you know, taste the rainbow, strike gold, whatever you want to call it. There's always that opportunity in the off season. I think that's why, you know, 32 fan bases have excitement for the off season. But
it's a chance for new beginnings.
It's always a chance for a new beginnings. I just think that Dolphins fan needs to be super realistic about how much can be accomplished in 1 year. And now if the offense really started to take off, maybe they could have some shots to help the defense. But I think this defense, if the defense could just finish around 15th, I would call that a win.
Heck yeah.
If they could finish right around the middle of the pack. I have very, very low expectations for this year's defense. There's just a lack of talent, a lack of good starting talent, in even depth, second and third tier guys on this team. You'll never fix it all in 1 year. It's just too much.
If I were Miami, I would find a way to make it so that you get a linebacker in round one this year. You have this guy. You have Miles Jack or Reggie Ragland or whichever linebacker you want to get out there to play in the middle. Fine. You had this guy. You know he's going to be good. You've taken care of the middle linebacker spot. Corner is still an issue. Okay, yes. So here's what you do. You re-sign Lewis Delmas for one more year. You give him a shot. He and Walt Akins can platoon or whatever, depending on what happens there. Free safety. So there you go. You go and get somebody to play at cornerback for a one-year deal, like a Courtland Finnegan type of deal, and you make him play opposite Brent Grimes for one more year. You have your middle linebacker. That's set up. You find a way to get in round two. You find a way to get maybe a young corner who can develop. You have Bobby McCain and Tony Lippett still.
Yeah.
Or you can get a pass rusher, which we're going to need as well, assuming Cameron Wake stays or not. Okay. So we eventually need pass rushers. So 2017, if your guy, whoever you developed, is starting to show a lot of talent, then maybe you can let him take that shot, and you can use your first rounder on whichever position did not work out for you then. My guess would be that they're going to need a pass rusher. So you get your hands on a pass rusher. You already have your middle linebacker. You find a way to bring back Jelani Jenkins. You go and get your cornerback, since Brent Grimes will probably be gone. And you've essentially taken care of the cornerback positions, hopefully. But it's going to take some good development. It's going to take time. Linebacker comes first, and then I want to deal with the secondary. After that, I want to get into the defensive line, because Ndamukong Suh is still going to do Ndamukong Suh-like things. I'm hoping Cameron Wake returns.
Yes.
So, and there are holes all over the place, and holes will continue to build as players depart. So I am just looking at it's kind of funny, and my family always talks about this. It's life, and in this case football, is just a big series of putting out fires. Which fire needs to be put out the most important? Which is the most important fire that needs to be put out right now? Right now, it's linebacker. Once you take care of linebacker, mm-hmm. go after the cornerbacks. Once you're done with that, go after the pass rushers. After that, you go after whatever fire needs to be put out next. The whole thing, the whole team, like that actually gives new meaning to the whole idea of the team as a dumpster fire. It's literally a fire, and every team is going to be like this. What's New England's fire right now? Fix the offensive line. Tom Brady, well, that's why they brought back their old offensive line coach. I'm sure Tom Brady is like singing praises right now. Mm-hmm. So they took care of that fire. Now what's the next fire? Wide receivers. Okay, Tom Brady needs more weapons. What's the next fire? Okay, let's see. We need better linebackers because Jerod Mayo just retired. Putting out fires. Miami needs to take out the linebacker fire first.
Yeah, that's for sure. And again, I said this last year, probably the end of September, I was going to take my podcast equipment and throw it in the lake if they don't come out of this next season with at least the middle linebacker position they think being fixed. You don't know if it's fixed till it's fixed. But, I mean, 2 years in a row, they've struck out in free agency. They've tried to woo a free agent linebacker and struck out twice and have left the draft without one. And then tried to get who was it that we had? Jordan Tripp. We drafted him late, right? And then we cut him, which I was really surprised by.
I was upset when they cut
him. Yeah, I remember that. So that didn't really make sense to me because I thought he had a chance to develop. So there you go. And then the next year, they didn't draft any linebackers. They brought on 4 undrafted free agents, of which a couple are still with the team.
The only one that's not there is Jeff Luke, or I don't know how you say it.
They cut Mike Hull and kept Luck.
Hull's still hanging around. Okay. So is Vigil and Neville Hewitt. Neville Hewitt is actually pretty impressive. Yeah, problem is he plays the same thing as Jelani Jenkins.
Yeah, Hewitt has the best chance. We need the depth, too. I'm not going to complain about it. Yeah, but the issue is you still got 2 other linebacker spots. What are we going to do with the double nickel, Misi? I mean, he's still under contract, correct?
He's making $4 million.
Yeah, they'll keep him.
And cutting him really doesn't really help all that much because he's only going to count for like 2-something in cap savings, and the other 2 is going to be dead, I think. So I don't have the numbers in front of me right now. But cutting Koa Misi really doesn't help much at all. So if I'm the Miami, I'm just keeping Koa. If nothing
else, he'll probably end up starting this year.
Well, you know what, man? Like, Koa's not terrific, but he's good.
Yeah, I feel like he was better. He used to be better than he was. I guess injury, maybe?
Probably injuries, but if you can get a middle linebacker and you can get Jelani Jenkins on that end, you can survive with Koa Misi. But the middle linebacker is the most important linebacker spot on the whole team, and Kelvin Shepard wouldn't even be a backup for a lot of teams. So him to be our starter, of course that's going to have a big impact on everybody else.
How did we not just tear them up? I was so blinded by everything else that was going on with Miami. And I saw the Kelvin Shepard move, and I knew in my heart deep down, and I buried it, that I hated that. But I just didn't verbalize it. I didn't, you know, we should have seen that coming. We were getting snowed by that team, them trying to convince us that that was actually a good move and not pure desperation because you had nobody else.
No, I knew that Kelvin Shepard was a bad idea from the beginning. I was just hoping that Ndamukong Suh's impact on the positive side would be able to at least overcome Kelvin Shepard on the negative side. And it turns out that Kelvin Shepard just was so bad that Ndamukong Suh's awesomeness couldn't overshadow it.
Yeah, we thought that Sue was going to make everything else so much better. But when you've got crap out of some of the cornerbacks or guys out of position, you know, Bryce McCain.
I'd like to know what happened to
the defense. Crap at linebacker. I'm sorry.
I would like to know what happened to the defensive line. Like, really, just thinking about it.
Yeah,
like,
let's get into that.
I agree.
I
don't have any theories as to why they just suddenly died out. Like, you have Ndamukong Suh, who is still incredible. They showed incredible penetration in the preseason, and then the regular season shows up and Cam Wake can't get to the rusher. Olivier Vernon can't get anywhere. Sue isn't getting anywhere. Mitchell, what happened? Like, I literally cannot fathom why they just vanished like that. There really was no reason for it.
Our defensive line coach went to be a defensive coordinator for the Jets.
No. But in the preseason, man, like, Terrell Williams was doing just fine. The defensive line was penetrating, eating up defenses. Cam Newton took a big hit in the preseason because he couldn't get past us. The reports out that it's the preseason.
That doesn't mean crap.
Dude, that's when everybody that I know understand that, man. But that so you're what essentially what we're trying to be sold here is that everybody just let Miami dominate them. I don't think so.
I'll be honest with you. I do. No, I do. I think that no one was giving max effort except
Ron,
for
would
Miami.
Mean it was a league-wide conspiracy.
No. The only team that was out there giving it everything like it was week one were the Dolphins. I mean, and that whole thing about, oh, they had to let us, they told us to let us, you got to ease up on us and blah, blah, this, that, and the other. That's because we were going full speed like it was the playoffs, and everybody else was playing preseason football. Bottom line, that's why it looked that good. In the proof, you know what the proof is? Week one started, and we played Washington, to me, as an average team, and went to the playoffs because that entire division sucked. And we looked just average if we even looked at that. And they were cutting Sue down at the knees, and they were finding ways to scheme around it. And it continued on. Now, it started to pick up a little bit as the season went on. They started to get some legs.
Got healthy.
Yeah, but I mean, I just wasn't buying it, man. I'm not this year. I'm telling you what, I will not be snowed by OTAs. I will be not snowed by training camp. What I even see with my own eyes, and I will not be snowed by any performances I see in the preseason. Refuse. Will not buy into it. I will buy into anything the Dolphins are doing good when it's week one and I see them do it in a real game that actually matters. I will not be fooled again by this team and by preseason performances and all that hype. It does not matter to me.
We'll see.
Well, I'm just telling you, I'm not going to do it this time because they look so good in preseason.
That's what you said last year.
No, actually, I was buying into it last year.
Yeah, but you seem determined to not do it.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you right now, I am not buying into it. And and what'll happen is, what's probably going to happen is they're going to look like awesome in preseason, and everybody's going to be like, yeah! And I'm going to be like, slow your roll, slow down, and everyone's going to hate me and curse me and unfollow me on Twitter. And then the season's going to come out, and they're going to suck again. You know, that's what's going to end up happening. I'm not buying it. I'm telling you, if I'm Dolphins fans, guys, wait till the season starts before we start proclaiming that this team is this team is that, this team is
now,
the other.
Oh, but now, Ron, they're going in the complete opposite direction. Now they're not buying it in the sense that they know they're going to suck, and we're already hating them before they even get a chance to do anything. Like, Gates has already probably been cursed out on the streets. And he hasn't done anything yet.
Hasn't even done anything yet. No, I don't. I'm not hating on Gase, and I'm not saying that the Dolphins are going to be horrible. I'm just saying that I think they're going to be kind of average or below average. You know? Yeah. What I'm saying is, when you think that a unit is so good, the defensive line or this or that, and all of a sudden the season starts and they're no good. You know? I mean, let's face it. That defensive line didn't go from what you thought was going to be best of the league to, you know, they're kind of good. They were sucking, man. They were horrible. I think a lot of it had to do with D-line coach. And don't we have the same D-line coach we had last year? Because we couldn't get anybody else. Didn't we try and go get the Detroit one? And everybody said, screw you, we don't want you.
No, the Bears blocked us from getting this guy.
But what about the guy that used to coach, and I don't know his name, unfortunately, the guy that used to coach Sue in Detroit on the D-line? They tried to go get him, too.
Yeah,
and got shunned.
No, I'm not sure that it ever was. I don't. You're talking about Jim Washburn.
Yes.
Not sure if that was ever in the cards.
It was reported heavily that they were trying to get him.
I wrote an article because because it said that we were getting the Washburn father and son duo. I was like, okay, then. But then it's later on that Jim Washburn was never part of this discussion. And like, okay.
When you have a D line that has Cam Wake and Sue, and your D-line's not very good, your butt should be fired. I don't care who they replace him with.
The older Washburn supposedly had health problems, so that might have a lot to do with why he's not coming.
Yeah, I get it, but I mean, it was bad, man. It was not good coaching of the D-line, in my opinion. And the fact that they kept – they kept like, what, 18? Is it like 18, 13 coaches from last year? That seems like a high amount to have a new head coach.
You're – Well, I mean, dude, it's not every – just because they were on Miami's coaching staff and they were part of Philbin's regime does not mean they were terrible. I mean, Lou Anarumo, he had a couple of interviews to be a defensive coordinator this past offseason. He decided to back and stay under the new guy, Vance Joseph. So there's that. And then you have like you said, Terrell Williams, who's sticking around now. Like, he was – like, I'm not going to begrudge him because obviously he's not going to be as good as Casey Rogers. Nobody's as good as Casey Rogers in that department, in my opinion. But you have this guy. He was pretty good with Oakland. I don't know what happened. Like, I'm not going to say that he's the reason the defensive line sucked horribly, because you don't have that much of a drop off just because of a coaching change. So the talent is still there. It's not like it just went away. So, and let's not forget that the entire defense as a whole was just awful. So we can't just say, oh, it's all this guy's fault.
It's true, but the D-line was supposed to be our shining spot, and it appeared to be our most talented and maybe one of the most talented in the NFL. And they weren't just not great. They were average or below average.
I know, Ron, but also let's take a look at this then. What was the excuse when Casey Rogers was still a defensive line coach in 2014 and everybody just suddenly disappeared after the Denver Broncos game? This was just a continuation of whatever had gone horribly wrong last season.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What was the excuse for Casey Rogers?
All right. Well, I guess we're going to find out, because if Cam Wake comes back healthy and we've got Sue, I mean, I don't know what you're going to do with the other spot, because I don't think we're keeping OV. I think it's going to be too expensive. And they're sucking again? I guess we'll see, won't we? There's just no excuse to even have Sue and Wake alone. If it was Sue and Wake and Lewis and Ron, you should still be getting some pressure on the quarterback, in my opinion. Well, honestly.
Well, if it was the case, man, then we could probably just go under the dude's legs or something.
I don't think I could. I'm. You're still a little. You're slim and fit. I am. I'm not anymore. I just fall down. Give me my $1 million. Thanks, guys.
Dude, no, I'm slim and thin, dude. They just pick me up and throw me into the sidelines like,
That's true, too.
Get out of my way, boy. You bother me.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, man. I'm not going to buy into whatever hype they try and sell us this year, especially if it's let's get rid of good players we have and sign old guys. And these are going to be the answer. I just don't want to see him do all that. Don't spend all your money on the biggest free agent. I'll be honest with you, I don't even know who the biggest free agents are.
That's because teams haven't cut anybody yet.
Yeah, like but who's out there that, you know, isn't re-signed, that is a true free agent? I mean, I know Forte, I know Alshon Jeffrey. Man, I don't even know. I haven't looked.
Alshon Jeffrey's not going anywhere.
I don't want them to go after, so that's why I haven't really looked. But I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure. I mean, they should be going after...
Right? Is that his name? Trevathan from the Broncos?
Don't know, man. I'll be honest with you. Don't have a clue. What position does he even play? Don't even know.
He's a middle linebacker.
Okay, let's go get him. Now that, and I've tweeted this out several times. You want to convince me you're spending money in the right way in free agency? You want to move stuff around to fix something?
Go
fix
get a
linebacker.
Middle linebacker?
Go get me a middle linebacker. I can live with that.
No, two words, actually.
What two Danielle words?
Ellerby.
Yeah,
opening middle linebacker.
Yeah, that was odd. Nobody saw that coming, that they were going to go dump Burnett and Dansby and grab, what was it, Ellerby and Wheeler?
Well, Wheeler was dumb, but Ellerby was like, oh, yeah, everybody wants Ellerby, and that's what it was touted as. This guy just won a Super Bowl. He was really good, and it's backing up Ray Lewis, so it's like, oh, yeah, let's do it. And then he shows up in Miami and does nothing. So
now, but so many players show up in Miami and do nothing. Is it Miami, or is it the players? Do they get to Miami and decide, hey, you know, hey.
South Beach.
Woo-hoo. Well, let me put it to you this way. When you're first playing, when you're a young guy, you know, second, third, fourth year, and you weren't drafted like number one overall, and even if you are drafted number one overall now, you don't have the big contract anymore. So when you're hungry, you know what I mean? When you're going for it, you have drive for something. You want that second contract. You want that money. But with Miami, we're always feeding them. We give them what they want. Like if I'm starving and you give me a big plate of food, guess what? After I eat that food, I ain't starving no more. I'm sitting on the couch and I'm chilling and I'm watching some TV.
That sounds like a terrible analogy, bro.
No, I'm telling you. If I am hungry and you feed me, I am no longer hungry. And that is what keeps happening in Miami.
I know what you're trying to say, but it just sounds so terrible. It's like, I'm not going to feed you. Like, no.
No, but that's what I'm saying, man. It's just these guys come to Miami, and I feel like they're not hungry anymore like they were with their original team. You know, it's this way with almost every free agent. If they were that great, their team would have kept them. There is always something wrong with just about every free agent. Now, different circumstances, like with Peyton Manning. You know, he was hurt. They got the first overall pick, and they got luck. Okay, we get that. That's so rare. Mostly, their team feels like they're not worth it. Just like, for example, OV. He's going to go to some other team. He's going to get paid $12 or $14 million a year to be someone's premier defensive end, premier pass rusher, and that team and that fan base are going to be solely disappointed to realize he is not that guy. So we're going to do it to somebody else. You know what I mean? Someone else is going to feel what we feel all the time because we always sign all these free agents from Mike Wallace or we trade for Brandon Marshall or what have you. I don't think Brandon Marshall just liked playing in Miami. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he liked Chad Henne. He thought Henne sucked.
He didn't like Chad Henne. He didn't have a problem. Was Pennington the quarterback when Marshall showed up? I don't remember.
I think that when we first got Marshall, it was after Pennington maybe got hurt, and I think Pennington and Marshall played for like a few games. I might be wrong on that, but I think it was mostly Henne. I'm pretty sure when Marshall came in and he was traded, we had already said Chad Henne's our starting quarterback. So it was, I think it was a year or two after Pennington originally got hurt, but before he was not on the team anymore.
And Marshall had always said that we were a quarterback away. I would have loved to see, maybe this is just me being speculative and trying to fantasize something that would have never happened, but I would have loved to see what would have happened if Ryan Tannehill and Brandon Marshall had gotten a chance to play together.
Interesting.
Like, if Marshall can do this stuff, this awesome stuff with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
That's true.
Then what could he have done with Tannehill?
Yeah, Marshall's been good everywhere he went except for Miami.
Marshall was good in Miami, man. Yeah, he wasn't a world beater, but he wasn't bad.
He was okay, but it goes to my point that people come to Miami and they just, I don't know what it is, man. It's like the drive isn't what it was before they got there. I don't know what it is. I mean, people point to so many things. Like Omar Kelly will sit there and tell you that it's all Ryan Tannehill's fault, but I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but let's face it. These guys come to Miami, and it just, I don't know. I don't see a lot of them real hungry. Maybe Brent Grimes? I mean,
Grimes had something to prove.
Delmas, even though he gotten hurt a lot? I mean, he seems to remain hungry.
No, Delmas kept with it.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them do, but most of them do not. They come to Miami, and they just seem to be given 80%. And I think Sue falls in that too. You can't sit there and tell me you felt like Sue was given 100%.
Yes.
All year.
Yes.
I don't see it.
But he's still only one man.
Yeah, I get that he was only one man, but I mean, come on, man. He was such just a force of nature in Detroit.
He had guys next to him there.
But he didn't always have those guys. And he was a force of nature from like day one. He didn't always have those guys. They didn't always have that ridiculous line. For a while, it was pretty much Sue and a bunch of guys you didn't know. And he was just unblockable, man. And he gets to Miami, and you barely know he's there. I mean, come on. I mean, really, do we think that all of a sudden he just started sucking? Or is he just not very happy? Maybe he just didn't like playing with Philbin. I don't know. Maybe he didn't like Coyle.
I don't think he was sucking to begin with. I never thought he was sucking. I just think that he wasn't making as much of an impact because everybody else wasn't giving him the support he needs. I mean, be honest here, Ron. Sue had help the whole time in Detroit. It wasn't like he was the only guy doing anything there. Like, Sue filled up holes. Sue made holes, and then people jumped through them. There was nobody there in Miami for that.
I feel like you're making excuses for him. That's my opinion. I just feel like it's excuses. I feel like he should have had more of an impact. I'm not sorry we signed him yet. I'm putting yet on that. I want to see how this year goes. So I'm not sorry we signed him yet. He is still, talent-wise, maybe the best defensive tackle in the NFL or one of them. You know, top three, whatever.
Donald is probably in that conversation.
Yeah, Donald, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, I just didn't see it last year. And you can't tell me, oh, he's the only one there. This team has some talented players. They have a lot of holes, but they have talent too. They're an odd mix of pro bowlers and nobodies. And, you know, on that line is where some talent was. I mean, you didn't get maximum production out of Sue. I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand what happens when some of these guys come to Miami. I'm at a loss for words with that. It's frustrating, though. As Dolphins fans, it's frustrating because we keep getting sold that this guy's going to be this, this guy's going to be this, this guy's going to be this, and we have yet to see it happen. We've yet to see us sign a big-time free agent, and he is what we were sold, what we were told he was going to be. Hasn't happened yet, and that's including Sue, in my opinion.
Yeah, I personally think you're being too hard on Sue, but either way, it's gonna be an interesting ride.
What about the thoughts? What about the rumors? And again, they could just be rumors, BS, old coaching staff making excuses, what have you. What about the rumors that they really don't have control of Sue? He doesn't really do what they tell him to do. He does what the hell he wants to do. Is that gonna get fixed this time, or is that still gonna happen?
Honest,
or did that even really happen? Was that just BS?
Well, first of all, I don't think it really happened. And second of all, even if it did happen, would you begrudge him for it?
Yes.
I don't think
it's his job to do what he's supposed to do,
yes,
regardless
I know,
if he likes
but,
his bosses or not.
Yes. So Ryan Tannehill, if he had rebelled and decided to run with the ball and made plays as a result, would you have been mad at him for it?
Okay, you got me there. Probably not. You caught me in a catch-22 there, boss. All right, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
But it's the play. Yeah, that's
but
what
was
I'm
it having an impact? Was Sue, what Sue was doing having an impact? Because he still really
well,
was
again,
having
I don't
an
think,
impact.
I don't think Sue was doing what he wasn't supposed to be doing. I don't think. I think this whole thing about him rebelling was just something that was made up because everybody was frustrated over the fact that they were losing. When the team is losing, everything is like a big deal. Everything is a problem. And then accusations fly left and they fly right. And then the whole team is against each other. Everybody hates each other in the locker room. Oh, Ryan Tannehill. There's not one person in the locker room who likes Ryan Tannehill. And then you see pictures later on about them on a boat having a great time.
Yeah, I just retweeted that today. It was Simon Clancy from BBC. He sent out that tweet and pretty much told Miko to shut her mouth. Why does anybody listen to her? That was interesting. That was like all these pictures of all these him hanging out with all the players, different players. So, but supposedly nobody likes Ryan Tannehill. So that's a good point.
It's just losing makes people angry. Like, dude, I lose when I even just losing video games to my brother. I go nuts because losing. Ah, hate it.
That's true. That's true. I mean, maybe I'm being hard on Sue. I'm sure he can take it. He doesn't even know who I am, so it's probably all right.
Yeah.
Speaking of people that I didn't think even knew who I was, I tried to retweet something. Somebody had a tweet of Chris McCain, the linebacker.
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
had a tweet of his, and I couldn't see the tweet, and I thought, that's odd. So yeah, I went in there to try and retweet it, and he had blocked me.
I'm blocked, too. Don't
why? Why did he block? I don't even – how does he even know who I am? I've never even tweeted him. Why did he block me?
I don't know.
Is it because I was talking crap to Miko? Is that what it was?
It could have been, or maybe you said something about him not being all that special, because that's probably what I did.
I don't know that I said anything about him at all on Twitter. I mean, maybe at some point I did, but I mean, I never, and if I did, I didn't mention him. I didn't, like, refer to him specifically on Twitter, like his handle. So I'm not sure how he would have even found out. That's odd.
Because people look for their name.
He sounds very sensitive to me. I think that's what it is.
Arthur Lynch used to look for his name all the time. That's how he came out to me. I said Arthur Lynch. Like, I didn't even put his handle on it, but he's like, apparently he looked for his own name, and he told me something about, do you even know what you're talking about? It's like, oh, you look for your own name, huh? Okay, then.
Nice. Yeah, I was trying to figure out. So he blocked you too, huh?
No, he doesn't block me. He don't care.
Not Arthur Lynch, but Chris
yeah,
McCain.
Yeah, Chris McCain blocked me. It's like, okay, whatever. I'm going to see you at the next community event.
Yeah. I found it interesting. Last night when I was on the AFC East Bros show, I told them that I don't follow Omar Kelly anymore, which actually I don't. I'm not sure much of what he says. Every now and then somebody will retweet something he says. I'll see it, but that's it.
Yeah, and I'll let you know because I always keep an eye on it. It's always fun because I can. It gives me great writing material for columns because I can always refute what he says.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it was just for me. It was just no. I couldn't do it anymore. I'm a lot less stressed out now that I don't listen to Omar Kelly. But they challenged me. They said, "Come on, you don't follow him anymore, or he blocked you." I said, no, actually, he did not block me.
Well,
I
nowadays,
just don't follow
Ron,
him
maybe you should try,
he
Ron.
Probably like, muted me, but.
No,
maybe
you
not.
Know what, Ron? Maybe you should try to get blocked because nowadays that seems to be a badge of honor.
Yeah, my and I was saying this before, my Twitter feed, all the people that follow me, it's like an Omar block party, literally. It was like anybody who's ever been blocked by Omar Kelly seems to follow me on Twitter for some reason. But because I don't follow him and I don't listen to his show anymore, if he even has a show, I don't know. So I really have no idea what he says anymore, what his opinion is. I mean, I could guess because I listened to him and read his articles for years. But if I see on Bleacher Report that the article came from him, I don't even read it. Because it's just so much crap that comes out of him.
I know it's going to be the same thing all over again.
Yeah, it's just always the same crap. I don't bother with him anymore. But I know you mentioned him a couple times last night on the show.
And here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I don't care if we mention him. I'll still talk about him here and there. But I don't have much to say now because I don't follow him and know what he does or says anymore. But I'm sure if he says something crazy enough, I'll find out.
Dan Marino's not good enough.
Yeah, Dan Marino sucked, for example. That'd be a perfect example. Dan Marino was horrible. He wasn't good enough to win a Super Bowl. Whatever. Oh, man. What an idiot. But what else would you like to add before we wrap this up, Lewis? I know you're a busy man and got better things to do than sit here and talk all day with me.
No, man, come on. You make it sound like this is a big burden. Oh, I'm gonna do this guy a favor because he's my burden. Come on, man.
No, I know. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
All I would say is that I want everybody to just keep a neutral state of mind. Not overly positive, not overly negative, because I know everybody wants to go on that end of it. And Kate Gase, even though he hasn't even shown up yet, because he's a rookie quarterback. Coach, he's Joe Philbin all over again. Like, literally, the only similarities that Joe Philbin and Adam Gase have is that they were both offensive coordinators before they became head coaches.
And one called their own plays,
and one called their own plays, and one held the clipboard for Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, there you go.
So, there you go. So, all I would say is that let's just wait and see what happens. Let's see what happens. It's a clean slate. Everything is brand new. I don't want to hear about old coaches. I don't want to hear about old players or old quarterback. It's a brand new philosophy being inserted into Miami. Let us see what happens. Everything that happens. Like, maybe they draft this guy that we're like, why would they draft him? Maybe Gase has a plan. We don't know that. We don't know yet. Let's just see what happens.
I agree. And as for me, those of that listened to me back in the day, and back in the day wasn't that long ago, and now you hear me, you're thinking, is this the same Ron? I'm not sure. For me, I know it's. I'm like, I'm a mixed bag. I'm like, well, does he think the Dolphins are good? Is he excited about this year? Does he think we suck? Does he hate? I mean, what is the story? For me, I'm mixed. I'm happy about some things, excited about a few things. I'm very skeptical about other things and nervous about other things. Which I think maybe makes me this year a little bit more level-headed and a little bit more realistic. Even if it seems like I'm a little bit all over the place, I can't be just, oh, the Dolphins are going to be great or the Dolphins are going to be horrible. I think the Dolphins are going to be average with always, like any team, the chance to kind of be better than you think they are. I mean, look at last year's Panthers. No one would have guessed that. Or the chance to be really bad. That also looms out there. The 1-15, 2-14 possibility, the season, the team implodes, Tannehill gets even worse. I mean, that's always a chance, too. Gase is no good. I mean, there is that chance, but more than likely, we're somewhere in the middle. So, because we're probably somewhere in the middle, I guess, this year, until we see what actually happens during the season, I will continue to be somewhere in the middle and point out what I think we do well and point out what I don't think we do well. And that's really how it's going to be this offseason for me, guys. So I hope everybody will continue to listen. Lewis, why don't you tell everybody where they can read you, listen to you, follow you, etc.
Well, my website's called finmaniacs.com. Always kind of keep up with the latest news regarding the Dolphins, throwing up columns, film reviews. We're going to have a draft guide coming up by Neil Driscoll in just a little while. I have to figure out how to put the PDF up on the website. I'll probably get my technical director to take care of that. In any case, my Twitter handle is @FLSportDebater, or you could tweet the website itself, @FinManiacs. And we always have a podcast every Tuesday night, so you can call in and talk with us. We're always willing to take in callers. Anything you want to discuss, we'll talk about it, as long as it has something to do with the Dolphins. Like, don't call in if you want to tell me how awesome or how bad Deadpool was. So
or Donald Trump.
Or Donald Trump. Yeah, don't call in and talk about Donald Trump for no reason, okay? So if you go call in for a Patriots podcast if you want to do that.
Okay. All right, and as for me, you can follow me on Twitter @UnsquishTheFish, as to where I am extremely active. You can also listen to me on the Next Fan Up podcast. It's a podcast where there's one super fan for each team, and we do write-ups on Facebook, and we get on there and we talk about our teams, talk about the NFL, you know, kind of in a rotation a little bit. It's called Next Fan Up Podcast. I'm proudly the Dolphins rep on that. Thanks for listening again, guys. It's awesome to be back, and I'll hear from you very soon.